Brad and Brit, Brad and Brit, the perfect combination of brawn and wit. Politics, sports, and trending shit. Let's tune in to Brad and Brit.
We're back. Welcome to the Brad and Brit cast.
Yay.
When did we do one? About 2 weeks ago? Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell everybody how you're doing.
I am doing. I have myelofibrosis, which is a really obnoxious disease. And I was in the hospital for 28 days, which is just about the minimum. Pretty good. Pretty yeah. good. The lab numbers have been moving in my favor. The first 100 days are very, very important. There are other issues that will need to be addressed, and we need those numbers to move up. And I'll bottom line this for you so that we don't spend too much time on it. You can text me or Facebook me or something if you want more information. But in my case, what they want to see in the next 100 days or so, when they test my blood, that my blood isn't my blood anymore. It's the blood of the stem cell donor. They want it to completely take over. Does that make sense?
Jeez.
Because my bone marrow was just shit. It was just crap. And they blew it out the best that they could with chemotherapy and injected the new stuff. This is pretty scientific, isn't it? Pretty great.
It is.
And
try to give
And now I'm taking a whole bunch of drugs 4 times a day to try to balance everything to move into that direction so that things can normalize for me. And, you know, hopefully less than a year from now, I'll be up and running and be able to interact with polite society. But for now, I'm staying in the house for several weeks, except for going back and forth to the hospital a couple times a week.
Are you still on chemo?
No. Those were targeted things for a couple of days, twice. They do what they do. Good. And I'm not a cancer patient. I don't have cancer. I never had cancer. Yeah. I could have had leukemia had this not been addressed. Right. So hopefully, go ahead, Barney Fife, say it. They tried to nip it in the bud. This is nip it in the bud kind of stuff. But it's not, there's no guarantees yet. No guarantees. But I'm in the right direction, and I was a good patient, and they were nice to me, and I was nice to them. I can't say I enjoyed being locked up for 28 days. In a big room, but that's just the way it is. You know, you live with it. You know, you work. You know, this is why I have such empathy for Donald Trump.
Oh, okay.
Because the idea that's right. Because the idea that this great man, who's being denied his freedom to campaign, which, by the way, what amendment is that, Britt, in the Constitution? The freedom to campaign.
69. I believe that is the 69th amendment.
The 69th Amendment. I mean, I know what it's like to suffer for 28 straight days. But, you know, one of my little headlines was going to be here for us. It was going to be Trump from the golden throne of Trump Tower to to the stainless steel Rikers Island toilet. Wouldn't that be a great?
Why not start there? That's a good place to start. Let me just throw this. There's a couple of things I wanted to ask you, because this whole thing about, well, now that he's being persecuted, this is really helping him out among the black demographic, because they can see, and black folks know what it's like to be unfairly persecuted by the government. And there have been a couple of people that have co-signed on this. Like, I think Stephen A. Smith co-signed on this idea.
Okay, that guy's out of control. He's out of control. He is. He you talk about being high on his own supply. Jesus, God Almighty. But you know what? That idea that and Trump threw this out there a bunch of times, right? That now he can identify with the blacks, and the blacks can identify with him, because only the blacks ever go through our judicial system in the first place and are unfairly treated, is right up there with Martin Luther King would be a Republican today. Believe it. Every year we hear it.
Yeah.
And it's not true. And in the end, I don't think that this is a, no, this is not a Nelson Mandela analogy. It doesn't work. But I guess on the edges, if you can find somebody on the margins, you can get somebody to come on with Harris Faulkner on Fox and say this. And so it gets into the water that way, don't you think?
Well, every time I hear that that MLK would be a Republican or was a Republican, it's bizarre. I just always think, well, Jesse Helms never got that memo. For some reason or other, Jesse Helms wasn't in on that conversation. And, of course, I thought of Jesse Helms yesterday with the protests at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where what was it that Jesse called UNC, the University of Negroes and Communists? Wasn't that what he called it at one point?
Yeah, I think that's the polite version of it. University of Negroes. Yes,
that is the point. I believe that was the Jesse Helms opinion piece on it. As I saw the protests in Chapel Hill, and of course they're going on all over the country. I'm not getting a flavor of, maybe you are, and I'm missing it. So tell me, the utter desecration of the American flag by those students in Carolina yesterday. In case you missed it, I think they took down the American flag, maybe stomped on it, threw it on the ground, and put up the Palestinian flag. And then the president of the university or the chancellor or whoever had to go out there with the cops, and they raised the American flag. I'm not getting the flavor of, oh, my God, those kids desecrated the American flag like I would have many, many years ago.
Right.
Not that it's helpful anyway.
Well, let's we're going to have to play a history professor and other history professor here. Because it's rather clear they don't teach history at all anywhere. No one knows anything.
No.
And we all sound like the old people on the porch here, I guess, because we just don't get it. We don't understand the wonderfulness of Hamas and what wonderful people they are. Because you're not just... when you're out there, I don't care whether you're 19 or 22, and you're screaming that Israel not only doesn't have a right to exist, which implies that they need to be all murdered, every Jew needs to be murdered. Not only are you in effect saying that while you're denying that you're saying that, we're just criticizing Israel's policies. No, you're not. No, you're not. You've gone way, way beyond that. You've moved into a first rank anti-Semitic, anti-Israeli, anti-Jewish tropes and rhetoric. But you get to play dress up. You get to wear the kefir, right? That kind of looks cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, right.
In fact, there's a story that they're complaining. The people who are protesting, particularly at Columbia, that they're not getting the kind of food and water deliveries that they deserve.
I saw this.
And you know what I'm thinking? The goddamn Israelis will not let the aid in, right? Just like in Gaza. It's the same thing in Upper Manhattan. They've got it blockaded off, and the damn Jews won't let in the aid trucks.
Are they not getting the non-gluten or the gluten-free non-dairy meals that they're ordering? Is that the problem?
Right. It wouldn't be correct stuff anyway, right? They'd say, we don't want
that's
that.
What I was, you know, I was saying that, this to a friend. I said this to a friend yesterday. I was watching this stuff in Chapel Hill because I think they had it on the Spectrum channel. They had the overhead view from WTVD in Raleigh-Durham. And I said, well, you get to choose. They got the dueling ones. You can either be for the genocide of the Palestinians or for the destruction of the Israeli nation state. You can be either one of those. You get to pick based on which side.
I think you can be both. I think you can. I think you can work both sides of that fence.
Which, I mean, that's the incredible complexity of the issue. I am absolutely 100% pro-Israel, but I don't like Netanyahu. I think Netanyahu's completely full of shit. I love the Palestinians. I appreciate the Palestinians, but I'm not going to support Hamas, and Hamas is not helping those people out. So it's a very complex issue.
Britt, that's like saying that you love the United States, but you hate Donald Trump. It's the same thing, right? I love Israel, but
it's somewhat similar. Think
Netanyahu is a self-interested politician who has been indicted, who's trying to save his ass politically. Ooh, sounds familiar. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
We said this a long time ago. When Benjamin Netanyahu, particularly during the Obama years, became an adjunct of the Republican Party, we said, this is not going to end well. This is not going to be a great look for him, and this will probably come back to bite him in the ass. And damn if it hasn't come back to bite him in the ass 100 times over.
But here's the problem. Here's the problem. And this is where history comes in. And it's not a for sure that it will repeat itself here. But the year 1968 hovers over all of this. And the year 1968 resulted in Richard Nixon being elected president, who took advantage of not just the violence that resulted in the assassinations of Robert F. Kennedy Sr. Do we have to do that now? Do we have to say it that way?
Yes, we do.
And of course, Martin Luther King, the man who'd be a Republican if he were alive today. But the Vietnam War protests had kicked into high gear, climaxing at the Democratic Convention in Chicago that year, where a police riot broke out. And if you've not watched, and it's easy to find on YouTube, the coverage of those couple days in Chicago and Dan Rather being beaten up practically by the cops. And Britt, could you do a little Walter Cronkite there for us with Dan Rather down on the floor of the convention?
What's going on down there, Dan? What's happening? Sir,
get your hands off me, sir. Do you intend to arrest me? Arrest me.
I believe we've got some thugs down there on the floor, Dan.
Right.
Honestly, that's when conventions used to actually be conventions. Now it's just an infomercial and it's all been planned out, and nothing ever like that could really happen now because it's all planned out, and they're not going to make the party look bad on live television.
Don't worry. Don't worry. It'll look bad because there are enough members of the Democratic Party who are, part of the convention itself who will be inside that arena.
Yeah.
And they're protest. There could be the same kind of thing could happen anyway.
It is interesting to look back at 68. Why was Richard Nixon elected president? First of all, the Democratic Party was in disarray because the guy who they thought was going to run didn't run. Even though he was not doing well in the polls, he decided he was going to bow out, and that left them scrambling to get a candidate, which they did, and it wasn't a very good candidate. The war was bothering some people because some people wanted to get out and some people wanted to fight even harder. And Nixon was able to ride that line, right, between people who wanted to get out of the war and people who wanted to go ahead and bomb the shit out of everything. And then go ahead.
Law and order. Dick Nixon.
Yeah.
Did Law and Order long before Dick Wolf did Law and Order.
What did Law and Order mean to Nixon? It meant we're going to take care of those Negroes and those hippies. We're going to go ahead and beat them down. Don't you worry, Mr. White America. We're going to take care of those people.
That's right. Crime in the streets, and the commercials reflected that. And then he had a flanker on the right who was a Democrat named George Wallace. And George Wallace really is kind of the the godfather, in a way, of the American right-wing law and order. Let's bash their heads. There ain't a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. And he was a very skilled demagogue. And he was skilled enough. I believe he won five states, the electoral votes of five states. And as a result, the nominee, Hubert Humphrey, who tried to play it down the middle and not be quite so judgmental of protesters and things of that sort, because just like Joe Biden seems to be right now, he is caught between what is supposedly the Democratic base, which does include the far left. The far left isn't going to vote for Donald Trump, but if they just get fed up with Joe Biden for whatever reason, because he's not supporting them, because we just passed more aid to Israel and we can't have that, this is going to hand the election possibly to Donald Trump. And we're talking about this in an isolated fashion, that this issue is an isolated thing. It could, and you know, we're ignoring abortion and other things.
But, right.
No, we can't do everything at once. So we're just looking at the overall atmosphere as it feels right now, and it feels terrible. And you know, 2 years after 1968 was, and we're coming up on the anniversary of it, May 4th, 1970, Kent State. Where they sent in the National Guard. Who wants to send in the National Guard right now? Republican politicians, Josh Hawley.
And you've seen, I think you saw the polling on that immediately after the Kent State incident. The American sentiment was with the National Guard. The immediate shock poll after that was, yeah, they did the right thing. Now, sentiment changed as time went on. And you, by the way, you were absolutely correct about 1968. It was five states for Wallace. Arkansas, Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. That's 45 electoral votes. And in this 1968 electoral map, Humphrey wins Texas. That is what happened in 1968. There you go.
Remember, 1968 is just a few years after the shift between liberal, conservative, Democratic, Republican occurs because of
everybody civil changes rights jerseys.
1965, but it didn't happen instantly.
There was
Nixon, who was out of office in 1965, just sitting there rubbing his hands together and plotting and scheming with a young man named Roger Ailes on how
That's
to
correct.
Exploit the divisions in the country. And this is the problem with Joe Biden's age, possibly. Not that he's not smart enough or is incapable of doing the job, but he isn't agile enough to come out and make an Obama kind of speech, a Bill Clinton kind of speech at a moment like this. Those two guys were masters. They really were. When there was a back against the wall kind of moment, whether it was Barack Obama with the whole Reverend Wright thing, remember that? That was it. He was dead. That was going to just kill him. Yeah. And he made a great speech.
100%. And in Winston-Salem.
And the same thing with Bill Clinton, when he made a speech that was essentially slapping down the far left Democratic base. It's called the Sister Soldier speech.
Yeah.
Where he came out and said, enough of this shit. We can't have this anymore. Democrats, liberals. And Joe Biden, I don't believe, has that kind of skill in him. He may have never had it. He was never that kind of politician. He just wasn't that guy.
But
he can't. He can't sit there and be. He can't go passive on this. He's got to say something. He's not saying anything.
Well, does it help if he goes and actually visits one of these college campuses? I don't necessarily think it should be Columbia. Does it help?
No.
You don't go talk to these guys?
No. That Brit, they're not interested in having a sit down with Joe Biden over American support, military support for Israel. That's not no. You can't do that. Because the chances of that backfiring are just beyond belief. And you know, No, no, not that.
So it's another sit down with Howard Stern then, I guess. That's going to really kind of carry the day.
Right.
Stern wore a suit.
When they were talking?
Yeah, Stern came into the studio with a suit. First of all, I think it was on a Friday, and I don't think Stern's worked a Friday at Sirius XM since ever.
By the way, nor should he.
I mean, I'm in favor of him. I think the three-day work week is plenty.
Why? Should be two. Should be two.
Everybody's talking about that was a pretty good move. I think that was a pretty good move. I don't really see any downside at all. I mean,
there's no downside to it. The fact that he really has spent the first 3.5 years of his term largely avoiding sitting down with Peter Baker of the New York Times. Again, the country will survive. The Times will survive.
Sure.
And we get the point.
I believe that Mr. Biden is able to somehow reach Peter Baker's audience and his readers. I think he's somehow able to get them without going directly through Mr. Baker. Yeah. Sorry. I just happen to think that's a thing.
Well, he's the Times believes it's its birthright that every president should be talking to. We get that. All right.
I sort of get it now. The 68, like all of this stuff is if we can just elect Donald Trump, we can get rid of this inflation. Food prices will come down, gas prices will come down, and these dirty, filthy hippies that are doing, we're gonna blow the shit out of them and get them out of the water, and everything will be fine. Daddy, please save us. I kind of get that sort of parallel between Nixon in 68 and Trump now.
Right, and if you do the follow up questions, and you could do them, Mr. Trump, how would you bring down prices? His answer will be something that has nothing to do with bringing down prices. It'll be, I'm going to put a tariff on everything that comes out of China.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. No, but he that's what he'll do. He will
and people will eat it up and think that that's right. His supporters will think that that's right. I'm not understanding. It does the exact opposite. There was a guy I know on Facebook. I immediately snoozed him. He had groceries set out on a counter, and it was a modest amount of groceries for $124. He goes, that's ridiculous. $124 for this much. I can't wait till November. This guy truly believes that his grocery bill is going to go down if Donald Trump gets back in the White House.
Well, the town here, your town, my town, every town, it should be, but it won't be because nobody reads anything. Is the Time Magazine interview with Trump, where he lays it all out. And I'm here to tell you that when you read Trump in his own words saying he's going to set up camps and he's going to remove the 11 million migrants and he's going to get an attorney general to start indicting everyone that he tells the attorney general to indict. And if a U.S. attorney refuses to do the bidding and do something that is wrong, they're gone. And all the civil servants must bow down and pledge their fealty to Donald Trump. And if we need to use the United States military to go into the cities and do what Donald Trump wants, anybody he feels is not loyal to Donald Trump, against posse comitatus. What's that, Mr. Trump? I don't know. I don't care. I've never heard of it. You know, we don't use the the military inside the borders of the United States. But remember, he tried that. He tried that when he crossed the street and held up the Bible. Remember that? Yeah,
I remember that.
So he's got all the same goals that, well, this guy in Germany did have and 1932, and Hitler talked about all the things he was going to do. He was open. He was transparent about it. Remember, the only difference between Trump and Hitler is Hitler could only get 37% of the vote. Trump's pushing, 45, 46, 47%. So Trump is in a better position to be the dictator of this country than Hitler was in 1932 until things started to fall in a different direction. And von Hindenburg, the guy who was running Germany, just kind of threw up his hands and said, we can control this guy. He's only got part of the parliament in his favor. We got him under our thumb, and next thing you know, boom, he's the Chancellor of Germany. And
sounds familiar. Things that sort. We kept hearing a lot in 2017 about, oh, we have checks and balances in this government. You don't understand. It's fine. Trump's not going to be able to do what he wants to do. There's checks and balances.
Yeah, in this piece in Time, he talks about monitoring women who are pregnant.
I'm going to die.
To make sure that they don't get abortions. What's he going to be doing? Putting?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Bracelets, you know, the
are we shooting? Because in another, by the way, as far as the evangelicals go, this is kind of mark of the beast stuff. If you start like injecting a computer chip into their heads or into their tummies or into their wrists or whatever, it feels kind of mark of the beast, if you will, the book of the Revelation.
Right.
It would be something that they would object to under any other circumstances, is what I'm saying. The evangelicals are kind of battling each other right now. There's a bit of an issue on the evangelical front.
Yeah.
You see, there was a guy in South Carolina. He was railing against that Trump Bible. He was a preacher, and he's railing against that Trump Bible. It was pretty good.
Oh, you mean the guy in Charlotte?
I think it was in Charlotte, or was he down in Greenville?
Oh, the guy's in Charlotte. That guy's great. That guy's great. He's in Charlotte.
That's funny. One of the big mega church guys is in Charlotte as well. That Stephen Furtick guy. And he looks a little like a boy band guy. I've always kind of wondered how the macho, Jesus as a guy who wipes out the shit at the market. I wonder how they always gravitated to that guy.
You know how Trump has been repeating for many years now, that in South America, they're releasing criminals, rapists, the mentally ill, and they're flooding in by the millions, right? And nobody ever calls them on it because it's just not true. Well, guess what? It happened. This would be on Channel 2 in Detroit. That's Fox 2 in Detroit, of all stations. And the name of the anchor is Roop Raj. Roop Raj. And Mr. Raj, as you will hear, does the unmentionable. He actually asked Trump, where'd you get that crap? Here we go.
What? Before we go, Venezuela was very crime-ridden. They announced the other day 72% reduction in crime in the last year. You know why? They moved all their criminals from Venezuela right into the good old USA. And Biden let them do it. It's a disgrace.
Sir, where are those numbers coming from?
I guess I get them from the papers in this case. I think it's a federal statement they're coming actually from Venezuela. They're coming from Venezuela.
We'll have to check on that. But Mr. President, I want to say thank you so much for joining us.
Okay. So let me get this straight. First of all, he gives the Sarah Palin answer. Ooh, where do you get this from?
All of the papers. All of them.
And then he has nothing left, so he says that Venezuela announced that they're sending all their criminals, all their mentally ill people, all their rapists out of the country. And obviously, they wouldn't lie about that. They would never try to cover that up. There's something they would be proud of. So
no, that's fine.
How many people will ever hear that or see that? The answer is nobody.
Yeah, it's the people that need to hear it. They won't hear it.
And they wouldn't They wouldn't care anyway.
When he comes out of the courtroom at that rope line, and I don't know if you guys have been following this on the court case, there's like a couple of women there on his staff, and I can't remember who they are, but they are in charge of printing out shit on a portable computer for him to look at and wave to the press when he goes out. They actually have it's in the courtroom or it's just outside. They've got a portable little printer where they can take a dead tree and print up something that they think he would be interested in, and he could wave it at the press as he's talking. They've been asking him some pretty obnoxious questions. The press has really been kind of getting his ass. Where's Melania? Where's Melania at? Huh? Where's Melania? I'm kind of digging that. They're kind of getting a little obnoxious and kind of rude, and he'll kind of just have to walk away, and he can't answer the questions. I do like that.
You want the word salad of the year?
I'd love to hear the word salad of the year.
It's so stupid. that if Kamala Harris heard it, she'd go, damn. Okay. Because she was the queen of the word salad for a couple of years, right? Every time she would talk, it would be a headline over on right-wing media.
Yeah, well, exactly. According to some people, she is. I don't think she's nearly as stupid as they made her out to be. I don't think she's not, nearly as bad.
But that's the point. That's the point here. So he's on with Hannity on Tuesday night.
What's your reaction to the police removing pro-Palestinian protesters from Columbia University?
So I will read this. I will not use the Trump accent. I will just read it. Because you don't want to put any extra dressing on top of the salad.
Yeah, the shit salad.
It's just such a sad thing to see. If you go back a year, go back 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, this would not even be possible to think about. Nobody would be thinking this could happen. You look at the anti-Semitism, the hatred of Israel by so many people. You go back 10 years, I mean, Israel was protected by Congress, and now Congress is just doing numbers that are unbelievable with, I think, a very, very small group of people within Congress, and it's got to stop. But we have to go back to the roots. We have to protect. We have to stop the anti-Semitism that's just pervading our country right now, and Biden has to do something.
Is this where he gets down to Chuck Schumer's a bad Jew?
Well, he's saying, where's Chuck Schumer? Why isn't Chuck Schumer talking about this? And this is the quandary that Democratic leaders, Schumer and Biden, they all have. Because it starts, of course, with Michigan. A lot of the Democratic base in Michigan is Arab American. Not a lot, but enough to maybe move the state. And there's no good way out. There's no good way out except if there is a ceasefire and a peace agreement. And you saw some signs of positivity over the weekend, but we've seen that before, and they seem to go nowhere because Hamas is, you know, it's Charlie Brown and Lucy and the football, right? It doesn't matter every time. You never know. So I would say if there was a ceasefire, that would not be good enough for people occupying buildings all across the country on college campuses, right? That wouldn't be good enough because they want divestment now. They want to crush the state of Israel now. Israel is they're the white oppressors, Britt. They are the white oppressors, and the Palestinians are the brown victims. Is that what it is? Is it that simple?
I get it. And I understand the frustration, and I don't want to see people, you know, get bombed and all of that other stuff. But I also don't get from how you, if you're in Michigan, for example, how you then take that and go, well, then, you know, what helps that situation is electing Donald Trump as president. That's certainly what helps that situation.
Well, yeah. You're not thinking about this while you're doing this. You're not thinking downstream about what happens if you depress Democratic turnout just enough to give Donald Trump the edge and get him elected as president. Aside from the fact that, I guess, you know, January 6th, just that is so, that may as well be Pearl Harbor. That may as well be Gettysburg. That may as well be the Battle of Guilford Courthouse. That, you know, that's happened so long ago. Why are you still talking about January, right? Are we at that point yet? This is the guy that planned it. This is the plotter. This is the guy. This is the one. This is the guy who stole the election in 2016. That's what this trial in New York is about. It's not a fucking hush money trial. Stop headlining hush money. Every headline, every graphic, Trump hush money trial. It's a fucking steal the election trial.
It's fraud. It's a fraud trial. That's what it is.
It's a fraud trial. It's driving me crazy.
But that's the obnoxiousness. And that's the obnoxiousness of the question that I ask you. Is it more likely that Benjamin Netanyahu is going to cost Joe Biden the election, or that Stormy Daniels is going to cost Donald Trump the election. These are the things I ask myself at night. And a lot of this, of course, is going to be based on who Donald Trump chooses as his running mate. You and I are staying up late thinking about this a lot. Can you tell me how murdering a dog helps you in the political sphere to have people come to your side? Would you be able to explain to me how that happens?
Well, I think what's going on here is this Christie Nome, the very well-respected governor of South Dakota. Why are there two Dakotas? Do there need to be two Dakotas?
No, we can use one.
She knew that this story was out there ready to be revealed. Okay. So I think she thought that by putting it in a book ahead of time, that it would undercut the shock value of it coming out, say, you know, 2 weeks before the election, after she is nominated along with Trump as the team for the Republicans, right? So she thought that by putting it out, but the way she wrote about it almost gleefully, that she threw the dog into a gravel pit because it was just untrainable.
It was a stupid dog. You know,
everybody doesn't. Hey, we don't train our dog. Our dog's a nice dog. He's not a genius, but the thought of just shooting a dog, it's kind of, and for a moment I thought, is it even possible that Republicans, who already, most of whom, all the males want to fuck her, right? Because she's total MILF city, right? Isn't she?
Oh, yeah. You mentioned Sarah Palin. She's like, right, Sarah Palin 2.0.
Right. And this just would up her hotness because she knows how to handle a gun. And, you know, we've all shot our dogs in our day, but we just don't talk.
Oh, no.
I don't know. I thought for a second it might help, but it looks to me, Britt, like this has basically knocked her out of contention.
It does.
Not even Trump is stupid enough to think that it would be a good thing to have to go around and put into his rally speeches support for this great woman who shot the dog. Even Trump recognizes that's just not a winner. And I think some of the right-wing podcasters, you know, the Ben Shapiros and the rest of them, they're all over her for this, not in a positive way.
When you do this, it's not just her sitting down and publishing a blog and saying, I shot a dog. I mean, she is someone who is ready for the next step nationally, according to some people. So there's a group of people that helps groom you with that. Hey, you're supposed to wear this. You're supposed to say this. You're supposed to do this. This is how you want to do this. And then when you're writing a book, there's a group of people. There's editors, there's publishers, there's people that are actually writing the book because she ain't writing shit. And when you go to them, you go, yeah, I think I want to put this dog anecdote in there. The people would normally go, no, I don't think that's going to work for you. As far as national political, I think that's really going to kill any chance. No. I want to put this in there. It's very important to me.
But that's the point. She knew that this story was going to come out, that other people,
she thought if
you get it out early, maybe it fades. Ask Mitt Romney about tying the dog to the roof, right?
Well, this is why you can't be Trump's running mate, because all you gotta do is like, don't say anything about it. When people bring it up, you lie about it. That's the move. That's the Trumpian move.
But she could have in the book written about this in a completely sympathetic way. You know, we had a dog, and we love that dog. It was a great dog, but he was biting people. He was bothering other animals, and so we had to put him down. And everybody knows how difficult that is. And I still cry to this day when I think of it. You could have written it that way, but she wrote about it like Sergeant Fury from The Grease Man. I went in and
then after that, she got a goat. There was a goat that she took down there and shot. Nobody's sticking up for the goat. Nobody gives a shit about a goat.
Well, because Britt, half the people in this country think goat means greatest of all time. They don't even know what a goat with four legs is. They don't know anymore.
I think your theory is correct that it's a bad story. I had to get out in front of it and own it. But I thought the other part of this was like, is this supposed to endear her to quote unquote middle America?
Forget it. You guys
that live in Manhattan and you guys that live on the coast out there and you're eating your brie and drinking your Merlot, you don't understand how sometimes we have to take a dog out into a gravel pit and blow their brains out. You don't get that.
No, Britt, this is a reverse Michael Jordan. You know, even Republicans buy sneakers. Well, guess what? Even Republicans own dogs. Okay.
And don't shoot them like a psychotic individual would.
Yeah.
Like a sociopath would. That's what they, by the way, killing an innocent animal is one of the top signs. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist, but I believe when you talk about, you know, sociopathic behavior, I think that's up there.
Yeah.
Just one of those things. Hey, can you tell me also, this is going to make me sound completely racist and I don't care. They're talking about this thing with the ban on, menthol cigarettes. And the CDC has said it should happen. And the Biden administration is like, wait, not so fast. We're gonna kick this can down the road. Is there something in the ether that they're going to lose black votes if they ban menthol cigarettes? Is there something out there that just kind of is in the zeitgeist about that? Have you heard all? Or
this is I haven't heard that, except that, you know, this has been a thing for 20 years about banning menthol cigarettes, because you remember, it doesn't matter where you live, whether it's in Greensboro or in any other, certainly city, in blacker neighborhoods, there would always be tons of Newport billboards.
Yeah. Newport, Salem.
Right. And, it was just known that as an ingredient, black folks liked menthol cigarettes more. I don't know why. It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
And it's, you know, we've managed to knock down smoking overall tremendously. The percentage of people that smoke now in the country is, it's pretty small. I don't have the number, but I'll just make it up. it's certainly less than half than it was 20, 25 years ago. It's pretty small. And this has been one of the touchstones of progress to get rid of menthol cigarettes. At this point, I'm thinking, you know what? Yes, this is a pander. Yes, this is horrific.
Isn't this the dumbest pander?
You do dumb panders when you need votes. But again, take it all away. So black people who like Joe Biden, which is, you know, a black,
exactly,
the Democratic candidate automatically gets 70%+ of the vote. Trump is claiming that black people like him because he gets arrested and has to go through the judicial system. And if Trump were to come out now and say, I will protect your menthol cigarettes, my blacks are going to still be able to smoke. I mean, could we get to that point? Because remember, Trump appoints judges that want to overrule the FDA, whether it's on birth control or abortion pills, and certainly menthol in cigarettes is under the aegis of the Food and Drug Administration. So could this become a point of contention? I don't know.
I'm glad you brought it up
because it, you know what? It's representative of just how stupid ridiculous things are. You know,
It would be great in my world, in an Aaron Sorkin West Wing way. I'd be like, if you're a black person who's going to vote against me because I'm banning menthol cigarettes, F you, go vote for Donald Trump. That's what I would love Joe Biden to say. He's not going to say that. He can't say that. But if that's going to be your issue and that's going to turn your vote,
you know what? That's a sister soldier opportunity.
Oh, God.
Okay.
It's too risky, though. It's too risky.
No, it isn't. No, it's because you don't have to really make it about race. There are white people who smoke menthol cigarettes, too. Okay.
True.
And probably, like everything else, the raw numbers have more white people smoking menthol cigarettes, right?
Probably.
It's just like everything else, because there's more white people, way more white people than black people.
If you try to explain this to somebody in France or Germany, like, well, he can't really ban them because he could lose the election. He can't really ban Biden can't ban the menthol cigarettes because it might cost him the election. You could never explain that. You can't explain that to people. Yeah. The number one song This Week in 1968 was Honey by Bobby Goldsboro. So Advantage 2024 and any song on the new Taylor Swift album. Then a little bit later this month, Archie Bell and the Drells, I believe they're from Houston, Texas, doing Tighten Up. Now, when we get into June, that's when 68 starts to rule. Mrs. Robinson for a couple weeks in June. Herb Alpert later in June with This Guy's in Love with You. Very first number one on A&M Records, Brad. Very first number one on A&M Records. Followed up by Hugh Masekela with Grazing in the Grass. Hello, I Love You by The Doors. People Got to Be Free by The Rascals. And then Tom T. Hall's classic Harper Valley PTA. That is your 1968 number one songs going into the fall.
And then on November 2nd, 1968, Brad got bar mitzvahed.
We'll see you guys later. Are you going to try to do one tomorrow?
Yeah, Friday. I have to go to the hospital, but we can do it tomorrow.
Outstanding. We'll do it again tomorrow, guys.